Hello, hola, bienvenido, and welcome back or welcome to the show whose name is about to change. It's me, Rob Ryan. I'm dropping into your podcast feed again this week to introduce one of our special episodes for your listening pleasure. As we continue to remodel and rebrand our podcast this month to make it even more interesting and valuable for you, we're bringing some fun outside shows created by our guest alumni into your feed each week for the next few weeks. In this special episode today, we share the creative talents of our amazing Hollywood friend, Natasha Chandel, from our episode 89 back on October 5th of 2023, which was entitled Lights, Camera, Entrepreneur, One Funny Woman's Journey in Hollywood. Natasha is an incredibly talented and funny professional screenwriter with deep television experience, a busy stand-up comedian who performs in Toronto, Canada this week and regularly around LA at the various comedy clubs here. She's a dating show podcast host with her Kinda Dating podcast, and now a dating coach as well. She's built a long creative career across television and comedy, and a lifelong adventure from Mumbai to Toronto, Canada, to New York City, and now home here in Los Angeles. We hope you enjoy this episode of Natasha's incredibly informative and funny top-ranked podcast, Kind of Dating, and her show, which was entitled Managing Your Emotions. Your continued support in our entrepreneurial community means everything to us, so please remember to like, follow, subscribe, and share our show. Stay tuned for upcoming improvements right here where you are already subscribed or follow us, and cheers to all of you entrepreneurial thinkers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to Kinda Dating, the comedy dating podcast where influential guests and I break down the dating world and try to figure out why the fuck do we all have commitment issues? Today's topic is mastering your emotions. Let's do this. Hello, Kinda Daters. I'm Natasha Chandel. You're listening to Kinda Dating. I want to rail off all of her accomplishments because she has so many and you should know her. She's one of my new favorite people. I'm already like claiming like I love you.
Too.
Yeah, I was like, whatever. But she's a best-selling author. She's a keynote speaker. She's a leader in the personal development space. And she invented the Gibson Integrated Attachment Theory, which if you heard the last episode is brilliant. And she's a founder of the Personal Development School, which we're all probably going to sign up for after this. Guys, welcome back, Thais Gibson.
Thank you so much for having me.
So great having you back. So in the last episode, you talked about that you're in a relationship, or well, you're married.
Yep.
Been married for a minute, but you guys have been together for a while. So this time we want to talk about like emotions. It's a big subject.
A big subject.
And like mastering your emotions. In the last episode, you talked about kind of being a commitment phobe in your own way and how you work through that and are married and kind of lead this great personal development school. So how did your emotions change over that time? Because it's had to.
Yes.
Right? There are very different emotions that come out when you are a commitment phobe.
100%. So I think like for me, and I shared this with you in the other episode, is we talked about how like I grew up and I was like, I'm never getting married. I'm never having kids. That's just the way it's going to be. And I think what that actually reflected, now that I'm like looking back on it, is it actually reflected that I didn't know how to work through conflict, number one. So I would just feel resentful. And then I would be like, why do people want to stay in relationships long-term and be miserable? And the second thing is that I didn't know how to rely on other people. Mm-hmm. So I could rely maybe in small ways on like friends or things like that. But I was really scared to open up and to rely on like a romantic partner. And a big part of what happened is as I learned to work through my own core wounds and my own fears of being like trapped or helpless or powerless or weak if I relied on somebody else, or abandoned if I relied and then they were gone and then, oh my gosh. As I worked through those core wounds, that changed obviously how emotionally triggered I would get around those issues, number one. So a lot of those like big fears and the big like triggers or concerns emotionally kind of faded away. But then secondly, I also learned to communicate my needs. So I learned what my needs were in relationships. And The big drivers of when we feel emotionally triggered are either literally core wounds or unmet needs. That's it. That's like really what it boils down to. And so as you reprogram core wounds and then you're able to communicate your needs to people. And once you find people who are the right fit for you and can actually be there and meet them, it's actually really rewarding, right? Really positive. So I went from like fearing commitment to like actually really appreciating commitment and what it means and what it entails in a relationship. And that for me was sort of that big emotional shift.
Yeah, because I don't know how it was for you, but when you do have those core wounds, a lot of times if you're looking at a graph, and that's how I used to describe myself as a very emotional, very reactive person back in the day, was like my highs were very high, my lows were very low. Mm-hmm. And it was just this, like, this really a steep wave for the listeners is what I'm doing with my hands, you know, it's like just very high, very low, very high, very low. And I really had to learn to get all of that, to get those waves to be a little less steep and
absolutely.
Basically like kind of live in this middle ground space. And now I do feel like for the most part I function there. And once off, you know, once in a while there might be some spike, but that's like such a hard thing to do. And it's I think you articulate it so well that the way to do that is to analyze if like, what is the thing that's making you reactive? Is it this core wound or is it this unmet need?
Yes.
I think that's a really great way to specify it. Hey friends, it's your girl, Natasha Chindale, and I've got some really cool news to share. I'm finally offering one-on-one virtual dating coaching. That's right. You've been sliding in my DMs for years, but let's finally chat face-to-face or Zoom-to-Zoom. If you're in a dating rut, let's get you out. I'm the friend you never had and the honest dating coach you need. Whether you're in a relationship or looking for one, I'm here to talk through your problem, provide personalized guidance, and find a solution. For all you loyal listeners, you know that I had a string of unhealthy relationships. After escaping an abusive one, I decided to take accountability for my love life, healed myself, and put myself on a path to dating success. I am now in a happy, healthy relationship and want to help empower you in your dating journey too. I want to get you to an empowered state where you're making dating decisions from a positive, secure place. So when the stars align and you meet that right person, you're ready to welcome them. My approach is honest, practical, because I've actually dated in the modern landscape, optimistic, and I tend to go deep. And as a woman of color and an immigrant, I understand the nuances of many cultures. And with my background as a comedian, we'll probably have some laughs along the way. If you're ready to take control of your dating life, let's chat. Go to our new website, www.kindadating.com/services for 50% off your first introductory session. That's right, 50% off your first introductory dating coaching session. Go to www.kindadating.com/services and book your dating coaching session with me today. Talk soon.
And I used to literally get triggered every day for sure. Maybe multiple times a day, like just by like all things, like driving in traffic would really trigger me. Like you could name all the things. And it's funny because it's like, I see, you know, as I was working through that, it's funny. Like when we get triggered, you'll know it's like a disproportionate reaction to like what's happening. But like the reality is that it's much bigger internally than it is externally. So for me, I had this huge trapped wound because I felt really trapped and controlled in childhood. And so I'm projecting that onto traffic. That's why I'm so upset. So what I found too is like working through the core wounds and learning my needs and how to meet them or request them is I start getting triggered less intensely. And then less frequently.
Yes.
And then it was like, oh, I feel emotionally stable. And I never thought I would feel like that at one point in my life. And not reactive in the same way and much calmer and all these different things, kind of more in that center point. I'm still a human being. I still have my moments, of course. But it's much, much easier now than it ever was before.
That's great to hear. I think it gives people hope, you know, because that they can control their feelings. I like how you said it, master your feelings. It's not control them, but I think it's mastering them. We're a dating podcast, and I think a lot of people get caught up in their feelings sort of early in the relationship, right? Like you talked about those, the stage five clingers, the anxious attachers, and then just the people who just like fall in love very quickly. why can that be a trap?
Really amazing question. So we were talking about this at the end of the episode before, and one of the big things is that we tend to easily get into something called limerence. So limerence is basically like addictive and obsessive infatuation. And some people are like, I love being in limerence. And sure, it feels good. But if you actually pay close attention to like limerence in the big picture, not just how it feels in the moment, first of all, limerence-based relationships rarely work out, because usually what ends up happening is people in this situation, when they're in limerence, they're so obsessed with the other person. They have them on such a pedestal that they won't even like share who they truly are. They won't take the mask off. They're like people-pleasing too much. They're too much on their best behavior, and it can be inauthentic. And then often you get scared around your objects of limerence. People will get all nervous and panicky, and they won't be able to like express themselves. But on top of that, usually limerence is actually based on somebody who has repressed different needs, repressed different traits, or has deeply unmet needs. And somebody comes and they seem to like show that they can meet this deeply unmet need. Maybe you felt unseen as a child, or maybe you felt, you know, another big example of limerence is somebody will be, let's say they didn't feel protected or looked out for as a child, and somebody comes along and they're really protecting them, has, you know, have their back a lot. Then somebody might feel like, oh my gosh, I was yearning for this growing up, and now someone's like this. And so they just really overly attach too quickly. And then also if somebody's, you know, expressing traits that you've repressed, we often don't realize that, oh, I'm in limerence because of trait variety and I'm biologically seeking to integrate this trait for myself. Instead, it's usually, oh, I, you know, have this experience of putting somebody on such a pedestal because I just think that these are my feelings. And so sometimes, like, you know, those really strong feelings that come on really fast, sometimes they're actually more warning you about things that you haven't integrated and balanced within yourself. And often if we don't recognize that part and do that work, we'll just chase after somebody at the expense of abandoning ourselves, our needs, our truth, our authenticity. And we can spend so much time like people pleasing people, chasing them, all these things. And all of those things end up being forms of self-abandonment. So it can kind of cause those like abandonment wounds to stay fresh.
Yeah, I think there's that example. And then there's also the people like most first dates, people come back and they are just in awe of that person. You know, they're just, they're like, well, it went so great and I can't wait to see them. And, you know, they're already, I think women are notorious for this. You know, we'll go on first dates and we'll be like, oh, I'm going to be Mrs. Martinez after this. How does that sound? This is Mrs. Martinez. Yeah, that sounds really good. What are our kids going to look like? Ooh, I hope that they have his dark hair and my, you know, like while they're just sitting across on a date, because oftentimes we're just caught up in our feelings. Because guys tend to word vomit, right? Guys will just be like, oh my God, we make such great babies together. But they're not saying it because they mean that. They're just in the moment. They're just like, wow, you're so pretty. Our babies will look fucking great. And then we're going, oh my God, he wants to marry me. And so we often get like really trapped in that. And mm-hmm. one of my things I've often repeated is that, and this is a controversial opinion, but I personally do not believe dating in and of itself to be hard. So I don't believe sitting across from somebody for an hour of your life is difficult. I think what is actually hard, if we're going down and working that core wound, is that managing your feelings is what makes dating hard. Because every time you're on a date, you're being triggered by something, like all these attachment styles are coming out. And what is at the core of that is some unmet need or some core wound.
100%.
And sometimes that can be hidden even in positivity. It can be even hidden in happiness. It can be even hidden in infatuation. Like you said, it's, hey, I don't want somebody to abandon me, so I'm going to love the shit out of them. And we don't realize that it's, and then when they don't actually want a second date,
yep,
because it didn't go as well as you thought it went, we feel fully abandoned.
Yes.
And then exactly what you said, the whether it's fearful or avoidant personality or all of those things start coming up, and then that makes dating hard.
Yes.
Because that's why we hate this process. And so I'm always like, guys, stop saying dating in and of itself is hard. It's not. It's managing your feelings that's hard.
I couldn't agree more. It's managing your feelings, and it's I think that if we change the relationship we have to dating,
yes,
then that would make it a lot easier. So if you see dating as like a learning experience, first and foremost, about yourself, about what needs healing, about what needs growth, what you're going to see is that dating will show you to yourself. Dating will show you what your core wounds are. Mm-hmm. Dating will show you where you are quick to abandon yourself because you're people pleasing or trying to meet somebody's needs or not sharing your boundaries. Dating will show you if you have somebody on this huge pedestal, why? Like when we go into relationships, we often get into this dynamic of we will project onto somebody and expect them to meet our needs in exactly the places that we are meeting our own needs the least. So if you look, for example, for like an anxious attachment style will often expect somebody to always stay connected to them, always pick up the phone, always text back quickly. All these different things get really triggered when they don't. Why? Because the anxious preoccupied is in learned helplessness in the relationship to themselves to make themselves not feel abandoned, to make themselves stay, they don't stay connected to self. Mm-hmm. And so all the things that we tend to project onto other people in terms of our expectations or our needs are the very things that we're struggling with the most. And if we could instead be like, okay, every time I get triggered, I'm going to sit with it. What is the unmet need? What's going on here for me? Or for some people, it can be like our core wounds also showing up as those toxic dating stories, right? We can be like, oh, everybody will betray me. Mm-hmm. So now dating is terrible if I believe truly that everybody will betray me, or if I believe, you know, all men are bad, you know, then I'm going to have such a hard time because of that story. So I think if there was like an order of things people can do just to manage their emotions around dating, it would be like, sit down, write with a pen and paper, what are all of your toxic dating stories? Like, is it about people's behavior? Is it that you're always going to be abandoned, that nobody will like you, that you're not good enough? Like, what are those ideas? And then we want to do some work to recondition mm-hmm. those, to really challenge those things. And then what are your biggest needs? The other thing, the other place people go really wrong in dating, besides core wounds and needs, is sort of like as it relates to needs, is people don't sit down and decide what their standards are or their non-negotiables are. I can't tell you how many times in private practice I would see people and they would be so good, like, you know, really two great people. And they sort of had the discussion early. One wanted kids, one didn't. They sort of had that discussion, but both of them thought the other person's going to change. And when it boiled down to it, they weren't willing. And there are non-negotiables we have. And we need to know ourselves to date successfully. We need to know what it is that we actually want, what we're looking for. I really don't think that, you know, of course it can work, but our batting average goes way down if we're thinking we're just going to go date and that dating's just going to be like, oh, they're attractive and I have a nice time with them, rather than like, no, this is what I'm looking for in a partner. You know, I know for me, a non-negotiable would be to not be able to communicate, right? To not work things out. And, you know, if we can know those things, you can also get the red flags early on and know what's working and not working, and we don't waste so much of our time. So I think like, find the toxic dating stories, work through them, learn what your needs are, learn to meet them in yourself so you don't just project the responsibility completely onto your partner, and then understand your standards in your love life and make sure you vet people properly when you're dating.
Kinda daters, are you a catch but not getting any matches on your dating app profile? Then Profile Booster is perfect for you. It's a brand new service offered by Kinda Dating to optimize your dating app profile so you can reflect the best version of yourself online and get the matches you deserve. With sometimes 5 pictures and 3 prompts, it's hard to showcase your full self. You'll be working with me, Natasha Chindale, a dating expert and professional screenwriter, and Luis Miranda, a veteran brand strategist with a track record of success. Oh, and we're a real-life couple. After a string of our own failed relationships and shitty dates, Luis and I individually decided to get more intentional about our love lives. We crafted dating app profiles that stood out, were memorable, and were authentically us. We matched on a dating app just 3 weeks before the pandemic lockdown, and recently celebrated our 3-year anniversary this year. Since then, we've successfully helped friends do the same, and now want to help you. We'll customize a plan just for you so you can showcase your authentic voice and image to attract the right match for you. Ready to boost your love life? Profile Booster is available now at an incredibly affordable price. Visit www.kindadating.com/services and let's transform your dating profile and get you more matches today.
Yeah, and I think also like, I liked how you said, you know, changing your relationship to dating, because that's something I did when I realized that, oh, this dating thing isn't hard. It's my feelings around it. And so what I did is then I started asking myself, well, where can I actually, in what relationship do I feel the most free to be able to express myself and my needs and my emotions the way exactly I'm feeling? And so I realized, oh, with my friends. So I said, okay, like I'm going to now start taking dating to see if I can find a new friend because I want to see if I can feel free enough to express myself with this person. And when I couldn't, it was fine. It was just like, oh, okay. Well, like that just, that wasn't the fit. Yeah. But that was exactly. So I just kind of took it as like, can I find a friend? Yeah. And that made it less, I don't know, for me, it made it less emotional because I felt like I don't have this, sexual need for my friends to fulfill, you know?
Yeah.
I was just like, if I'm already going on a date with you, I somehow think you're relatively attractive. So like, we're okay. We'll figure that out. But I wanted to know, like, can I be...
Do we connect? Do we
click? And then that just made, I don't know, for me, it just made me, allowed me to manage my feelings better around it.
I love that.
At least for me.
And but, to be yourself a little bit more too, which is important.
Yeah. It just kind of took the weight off of it. Instead of going like, I'm trying to find a life partner. It was just like, can I be friends with you? And if not, like that's probably not a fit. Yeah. Like simple. Yeah. But guys, if you like the episode so far, please make sure you screenshot the episode and tag us on social media. We're all over. We're at Kinda Dating across the board. Also, remember to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. I don't know why you haven't, but if you haven't, you should look down at your phone and press follow on Apple and Spotify. And tell your friends, because we like new friends onto the podcast. I'm curious, Thais, like, why are we emotional about one thing in our life and, like, just totally unemotional about another?
Interesting. So at the end of the day, it's honestly just going to boil down to the same things. We can be really triggered differently because of the meaning we give. So if I, for example, like, one thing that I don't have a big sensitivity to is criticism as much. Like, and that's because I grew up, I didn't have that big core wound as much if I am defective. And so if somebody would criticize me, I'd be like, okay, you know, like that's theirs. Or I'd be like, is this true for me? Like, you know, are they giving me feedback that I could use? But if somebody tried to control me, I would go off the rails, right?
Yeah.
So it's based on like what our pre-existing core wounds are. And that's really what a trigger is. A trigger is literally that we have a core wound because of previous experiences. And what we're doing is we're experiencing the emotion in the moment from what's happening combined with all of the subconsciously stored emotion from all the previous experiences where we felt that way. And that's actually like your subconscious stores everything. And it stores it with the emotion intact, right? Like we were talking about this before, but if you sit down and you think back to your favorite childhood memory or your least favorite childhood memory, if you sit down and you close your eyes and you recount that story, you're going to feel all those feelings because your subconscious stores all that emotion and memory. So it's funny because sometimes we'll see people get triggered by like what seems to us on the outside, like really small things. And I believe people should have a grit. I believe people should persevere through things for sure. I do think that's an important part. Like life won't always be roses and butterflies and, you know, having resiliency is important. But at the same time, it's very easy to be like, why are they so upset about that? Because we don't relate to that core wound. Whereas maybe for them, their core wound is something that they experienced 9 out of 10 suffering around in childhood and now something touched it. And now they're like really emotional about something and we're like, well, it's not a big deal, but it is internally, right? It's our internal world that's really a big deal or not.
No, it's a really good point because my brother doesn't understand. Like I was, you know, very much like I'm never getting married and I just didn't want any of these things. And he was always like, but I don't get it. We grew up in the same house. Like we saw the same shit because there was a lot of like domestic abuse too in my home. And so he was like, I don't get it. Like I was fine. I grew up in the same environment. And I had to basically remind him and, you know, the family. I was like, I was a girl viewing that was very different than a boy viewing that, and also a taller, bigger guy versus a smaller girl who felt a lot of like actual, like, oh fuck, what if somebody goes crazy in a marriage? Like that was it was such a fear I had. I was like, what if they go crazy? What if I'm with somebody and they go crazy? And then everybody's like, why would they go crazy? I'm like, I don't know, people go crazy. And nobody understood what I meant, but that's what I meant is that, you know, we had two very different experiences.
Absolutely.
Because I was small and a boundary being pushed in that sense was very different than when it was, he was a tall, he's my brother, 6'2". So like he was always much bigger than me. Yeah. And so to him, he didn't feel fear, like physical fear, yeah, where I did. And so he didn't understand. And, but it was the exact same experience.
Exactly. And, but you also said he was older at the time, yeah, too. You know, there's so many factors. And what really ultimately makes the core wound or not is what we make this the situation mean. So you, as a small, young girl, probably felt unsafe. And maybe he felt something totally different. Maybe
I think he felt anger.
Yeah.
I think he felt more like he couldn't do anything. And yeah, so he felt really angry about it.
And maybe that's like him feeling out of control, right? Mm-hmm. Or powerless or something like that. And then that wound will show up for him somewhere, some way. Yeah. But for you, it'll be different. And so it's always like the way our mind interprets things, mm-hmm, based on our circumstances and then how it stores that. And then that's like what we will unfortunately just project back out onto the world too, mm-hmm, right? We assume that this will happen. Like you said, like, what if someone goes crazy? And underneath that, like the core wound is kind of like, what if I'm unsafe, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have that there for us. And that's why it's so important. Like I hate the word baggage. Like I just have never liked that word. But there is an element of like, we carry stuff with us, you know, and that's because your subconscious is designed that way, you know, and our subconscious as well is designed to hang on to negative more than positive. So like, I always give the analogy, if I'm walking out in the forest and I see a bear, I don't like run from the bear, get home okay, and then go like, oh, what a beautiful tree beside the bear. Like, I'm like, no, the bear's teeth. Like we remember the negative because we're wired that way so we can survive those threats later on. And so we have to realize like our mind's trying to like help us by doing that. But oftentimes we're not living in like a run from the bear world anymore. And so we have to see like, what are those pieces that we're bringing with us? What are we carrying with us? And like, do we really want to be carrying that? Like, is it time to do the work and let those things go so that we're not, I think it's like an injustice. We go through hard things as children sometimes, as it is, especially for really hard things that certain people go through. Some of what you shared or other listeners, but it's an even greater injustice when we then reproject and relive those hard things in the relationship to ourselves and we re-traumatize ourselves thinking about those things. We're assuming them, mm-hmm, over and over and over again. And that's where like that emotion will come up and dating will be much harder.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I guess, you know, there's a lot of people who also love their emotions. So what is the, you know, what is the fine line between mastering your emotions and becoming just emotionless?
Great question. The first thing is always to feel them. And nobody likes to hear that, but we always have to get into relationship with them. Like if we're repressing on some level, we're missing like the information that they're trying to give us, right? They're these like perfect feedback mechanisms. And, you know, I think what we often think, especially for people, and this is its own challenge, right? We can either repress because we're like, I'm scared to feel this. Let me just like push it away. But on the flip side, we can also go, oh, my feelings right now are your fault. Mm-hmm. We can go, you made me feel this way.
Which I think most people do.
Yes. And that doesn't do any good either. Mm-hmm. And so the point that we have to get to is like, we have to see like, what is a root cause? I'm a big believer in root cause. I don't like to just look at symptoms of things. Mm-hmm. It's very limiting in our ability to change things. And so root cause is going back down to the core wounds. We have a core wound here. Okay. Let's reprogram that core wound. Or root causes, I have this unmet need. Let me articulate what the need is. So if we can take our emotions, feel them, actually ask ourselves, what information is this giving me? Is it telling me that I'm here telling myself this really painful story? Or is it here telling me that I have an unmet need that I have to go share with my partner or that I have to go communicate to my partner? I have, hey, what you said to me, it didn't land well with me. That kind of hurt. Can you be more mindful of that in the future? If we can have these conversations to get the needs met, and then we can be in a position where we're actually working through these core wounds that we're carrying, this is how now we're in a place where it's like the middle ground, right? Mm. We're using our emotions instead of being used by our emotions. And if we're just being used by our emotions, unfortunately, neuroscience has actually proven that every single decision we make is based on our emotional state. So a neuroscientist named Antonio Damasio discovered that literally every decision we make is based on emotion. So even people who are like, no, I'm the logical, rational thinker over here, it's not true. You're still making an emotionally based decision at the tipping point, and then you're just quick to rationalize things through logic. And so I give this acronym to people. There's two of them, but it's like BTEA, right? For beliefs, thoughts, emotions, actions. And there's NEA, which is needs, emotions, actions. If I have a limiting belief, let's just say that I'm not good enough. And let's say I'm going to go to a social event, a networking event, try to meet people. Well, that that belief is going to act like a tree trunk and it's going to have its little tree branches. Mm-hmm. And so the I am not good enough will start telling me, you know, I'll start telling myself all these stories that are like, I'm not interesting enough. I'm not going to meet any friends. I'm not going to be likable enough for anybody. I'm not going to be smart enough. I'm not going to be, you know, you name it, fill in the blank, not enough, right? And then how do I feel when I'm thinking those things, right? I feel terrible. I feel insecure. I feel afraid. And then when I go into the place, what am I going to do? Am I going to be who I am and feel comfortable and really try to connect with people? Or am I going to be somebody who like hides in the background, or, you know, some people get really defensive, you know, or try to show off way too much, you know? So then we cope. Then that's what our action is, right? It's all based on these root things that are not resolved. And then on the flip side, if I have an unmet need, right, I might go, okay, I have this unmet need to be seen and heard by my partner. And so then I might feel negative emotion because, again, our emotion is just perfect feedback telling us these things. And then rather than like understanding and trying to gain knowledge into what is the unmet need, how can I action it or create a strategy for it? Instead, I might go, he never sees and hears me. I'm going to shut down to him too. I'm not even going to see and hear him. And it's like, you know, if we, instead of just getting used by our emotions, could actually witness our emotions, get present with them, and like ask ourselves, what feedback is this giving me about my beliefs and thoughts or about my needs? Now we're actually mastering our emotional state, and it's not control. It's like you were saying that before, and it was a beautiful point. Like, it's not control. It's like harmony. It's like us being in a relationship with our emotions and being able to like unpack this information that they're giving to us. And then we're empowered to heal and grow. And then we're empowered to like, you know, break through different glass ceilings in our lives as well.
Yeah, because I also think of it like, you know, mastering your emotions comes from a place of security. Mm-hmm. And when you feel like you're worried about being unemotional, that's coming from a place of defensiveness. Because, you know, when you are truly able to master your emotions, it's probably because you've worked through it and you are, again, coming from a place more of consciousness. Unemotional people are just blocking because they're coping. It's a way of going, I can't handle emotion. So if you find yourself kind of worried or going in that direction, then maybe it's like you got to look and see, like, are you just trying to protect yourself from feeling anything?
Yeah.
Because that is a problem.
I always say to people like this analogy, right? If you go to your friend's house, your friend says, hey, can you come over? I'm having a bad day. I really need a friend. Can you come over? And you get there and your friend starts telling you about their day and you're like, I can't handle you. Like, just while you tell me your bad day, I'm going to scroll through social media. Or while you tell me your bad day, I'm going to drink wine or have the TV on. You'd be like, I need you to be present with me. But what we do is we dissociate from ourselves. We do the same thing to ourselves. We're like, oh, just to be with myself. I feel bad emotions. I'm going to drink them down. I'm going to distract them away. And we have to be able to actually look inwards and get present and be the friend that we would need in a time like that, rather than trying to escape our emotions by pushing them away in these different forms.
Okay, so as we wrap out this episode, you know, one of the other things I really want to talk about is like, okay, so we often talk about mastering our emotions and we think of it like all these negative, classic negative emotions, anger, resentment, jealousy, whatever, all the things that are triggering you. But I also want to talk about like toxic positivity.
Ooh.
You know, as sort of like the opposite end of the emotion spectrum.
Yes.
Extremely happy all the time, which can fall under a lot of other things. So like, what do you kind of think about that, and how can people work to balance both sides of that coin?
It's a great question. I think if people are paying attention to how being around somebody like that makes you feel in your body, you feel a little bit of the inauthenticity, right? Like if somebody is so positive all the time about everything, there's kind of this sense of like, hey, you're not authentic. You're not vulnerable. You're not like a human. Like you're a positive robot, right? And I think that we feel that. I know for me, like I really value authenticity. I value realness and real conversations and exchanges. And I know I have had people in my life who have gone through that phase in different ways. And I feel like, where are you? Like, where's the human here, right? And I think that, you know, we go through highs and lows. We go through ups and downs as human beings. And the goal is not to feel positive all the time. In fact, if we are in that space, sometimes we're like repressing some of what's really going on. Or sometimes we're in a space as well where we're not hearing ourselves, right? We're like, oh, I should just be positive. I should just, and sometimes in within that as well is like, just trying to people please, right? Oh, I just want to be the person that's always positive or the person. And so, you know, I imagine you have a child and imagine that child's crying and you go, just be positive, right? That's not helpful to a child. You're not being there with it. Instead, you want to be like, honey, why are you upset? Tell me what's going on. And then you want to hear the child and be present with them and then work through whatever the child is facing or experiencing alongside them and encourage them to do that work with you. And like, that's real, right? That's the human experience. And that's like true support. And so I always think of like the things that we do to ourselves. Like, imagine if you did that to somebody else, like, would that feel good? And so if we're going, I should just be the positive person 24/7 all the time. How is that any different than going to a child going, they're crying or they're upset. And you're like, just be positive. That doesn't feel good. And that won't land well. And so, you know, I think that when we're really in alignment with our needs, we feel more fulfilled. I think when we have a lot less core wounds, we're more centered. We're less likely to be triggered and really upset. Like, we can improve the emotional quality of our lives for sure. But, you know, we tend to go through these sort of cycles where our extreme highs can often be followed by extreme lows as well. And our mind is always seeking at a subconscious level equilibrium. So sometimes too, if there's too much positivity all the time and it's sort of that front, sometimes it kind of represents a bit of a disconnect from our true selves.
Yeah. I think that some of the listeners know about this, but I've only started talking about it a little recently. I don't know why, but I used to be part of a cult for 5 years. But it was during some formative years, so it kind of fucked with my head. But one of the things about it was that there was a lot of like, be positive, be positive, be positive, be positive, be positive, be positive, be positive. Like, I can't, you know, it was just so reiterated. And there was no explanation around what it meant. There was no explanation. And this is why I said in the last episode, why like I had no boundaries. I had no anger. I didn't know how to feel that because I was always just taught be positive.
Wow.
And what that led to for me was a repression of emotion. It led to a food, like an eating disorder. It led to a lot of like, you know, So when I went through that and then I finally opened up, like I said, I went through the other extreme and then I was like super angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really had to learn that mastering your emotion doesn't mean, like, I've literally gone through the spectrum. I went through the super happy to the super angry to the completely unemotional, like numb, fuck it. Like, yeah. I don't want to feel any of this. This is all too much. To realize that mastering your emotion really just means that there's a time and place for all of this. It does not mean don't feel any of this. Because I think what you said right in the beginning, you said feel everything.
Absolutely.
Because it's so important to feel it. It's just the idea of like knowing how much to dwell in it. And to live in that for how long. Because sometimes we can also live too much in happiness. And then that can cause a lot of sadness when the moment of happiness goes away. Because it's
relative.
Inevitable.
And it's relative to each other.
Yeah.
Yes.
And like, and then, but then sometimes we can like live in pure sadness, especially in relationships and after breakups. And so it's just like figuring out that all these feelings are real and they're okay. Like, it's even okay to feel jealous sometimes, but maybe it's just like a pang of it. And then you move on and you talk about it. Like, I, you know, I'm going to talk about it in the episode where I reveal what happened. but you know, I recent and I pride myself on generally being a pretty secure person, but I got this like weird pang of jealousy. You know, where my partner used to be engaged in the past, like long before me. And I was like, well, like as somebody who said who never wants to get married, I was like, but like, why didn't he want to get engaged to me? Why hasn't he asked me? And instead of dwelling in that, and like I did for a tiny bit where I was like, I noticed it was coming out in my reactions to him and my interactions.
Yeah.
I talked to my therapist. And then she was like, you know what you have to do? I was like, yeah, talk to him about it. And then I talked to him about it. And then the answer was like, but you always said you didn't want to. Like, I would totally do it. You just always said no. And I was like, oh. Okay.
There you go.
And I called her up. I was like, oh yeah, I feel great now. And she's like, what? And I was like, yeah, I feel great. And like, it wasn't like really that I was jealous, but I like let that pang happen. And then I talked about it and it was okay. And it was over and it was done. And like, that's okay too. It was 100%. Okay that I felt like
but
that.
You
but it's cool.
You used the jealousy as feedback to go do something to meet a need, right? Yes. You needed certainty. You needed understanding. You needed clarity. You needed transparency.
And then when I even realized that it wasn't even like I needed the ring. All I wanted him to say was, I see you as family.
Yeah, I love you. I
Isn't
care.
Isn't that so stupid? I was like, what the
That's
fuck?
Amazing.
I just
it's
needed him to
stupid.
Say the words, I see you as family.
I see you as that He's, quality
He actually
of bond.
Just literally said to me, he's like, no, but you are my family.
And that was it.
I was like, oh, okay, well, thank you. That's all I needed to hear. I don't know why. We've been together for 4 years. Why would I not feel that? We have a home. We have everything. But I just needed to hear the words.
And that's the part that's so beautiful is like you use the emotion instead of getting used by the emotion. It was like, oh, what feedback is this giving me? And went for it.
Yeah.
It's so interesting too because they say jealousy. Well, specifically envy. It represents a part of ourselves that we feel that we let go of, that we disconnected from. And I remember having a conversation with a client once and she was like, Thais, she was like really successful in the corporate world and she'd been my client for a while and she was like, Thais, I have been ruminating about all this jealousy over the weekend. She came into session and said this. And I was like, oh, like what about? And she said, I saw this lady painting on the street, like in sort of, it was actually in downtown Toronto, like Yonge and Dundas area. And she said, she was like doing these street paintings and this art. And I felt so envious. And she's like, why? And I was like, oh, did you do a lot of art? Were you creative when you were young? And she was like, oh my goodness. Yes, like that's actually a part of me I like miss sometimes. And envy often represents these things. And it's so funny because for you, at some point, you would have had to like, and then, I don't know. I know for me, I was not the child that was like envisioned marriage.
No. Neither.
But there can be a part of you that yearns for that depth of connection, that quality of connection.
That's what it was.
Shuts it away. And then all of a sudden that experience is actually you trying to integrate that and like recognize that at this point of your life. So it's cool that you were like able to do that.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's just like going through all those spectrums. And I think it's important for people to learn to find that balance for themselves. Yes. And I just love that you're like, feel everything because it's
feel
important.
Feel and allow it to be a container for it, right? Like, and the way, this sounds so cliche, but I really believe in this so much. I believe two big things about our feelings. A lot of our healing happens when we become our own parents. So when we can give to ourselves what we couldn't access as a child. And the other thing is like, we should treat our emotions like we would treat a wounded child in pain. You wouldn't go to a child and say, be positive. You wouldn't go to a child and say, shh, be quiet, stop crying, get over it. You wouldn't go to a friend and say like, okay, in order to hang out with you when you're emotional, I have to drink 3 glasses of wine or I have to watch television while you're expressing to me. So why do we do those things to ourselves? Like that's not going to feel any differently than if somebody does them to us. In fact, arguably it feels worse. So I think like allowing ourselves to have our emotions, allowing ourselves to recognize that if you listen to your emotions and build a relationship to them, it's going to be one of the best things you can do because your emotions are the container of all this really, really powerful information that's waiting to be understood if we listen to the feedback that's there.
Well, I don't feel like I can find a better spot to wrap this episode out because I feel like you put that so beautifully and so articulately.
Thank you.
Thais, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was so great. Again, I could talk to you forever, but I want everybody to be able to find you. You did your 6 questions in the last episode. So guys, if you want to hear Thais' answers to her 6 questions, check out her last episode on integrated attachment theory. Thank you again so much. And how can everyone find you?
Thank you for having me. I love this. I enjoy speaking with you so much. So you can find me at personaldevelopmentschool.com. And we have a free attachment style quiz there. You can check out. It gives a free report. And we also put daily content on YouTube pretty much almost every day. So personaldevelopmentschool-Thais Gibson.
I love it. And guys, please, again, follow Thais and all of these links will be in the show notes of this episode. Follow us too. We're on social media. We're at Kinda Dating Across the Board. I'm at Natasha Chandale on Instagram and Facebook and Natasha.Chandale on TikTok. Guys, thank you so much for downloading this episode. If you like something you heard, please remember to screenshot the episode and tag us on social media. Finally, I know it seems tough out there, but just try. Till next time. Kinda Dating is created, produced, and hosted by myself, Natasha Chandale. Aisha Holden is my co-host and our social media producer. And we only sound great thanks to our producer and audio engineer, Adam Pineless. The opening music is composed by Joe Lorenzetti, and our logo and graphics are by Jenna Yenick and K. Daniel Ellis.
As always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show via any popular podcasting platform, as well as find us on social media at Mentors Today. And if you'd like to connect with our host, you can find Rob at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias, and thank you.